bag of truth for life, heard daily and weekends on Bible School Radio, 91.3 KDKR, Decatur, Dallas, Fort Worth, and on 91.3 KYJC Commerce.
Portions of KDKR programming do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or staff.
Prudent Money with Bob Brooks is sponsored by the Prudent Money Foundation on 91.3.
Well, seven gray swans. Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, there's a lot of anxiety in the air. Maybe it's maybe it is the pre-election environment. I don't know what it is, but there's a lot of speculation of what could happen. And so it always brings me back to a book that my friend Chuck Bentley wrote and is on the program with us today called Seven Gray Swans. And Chuck, you know, I think this is an important conversation. We've talked about the book before and continue to refer back to the book. But there's, you know, there's everything from people writing doom and gloom newsletters and trying to sell newsletters and stirring it up. But there just seems like there is a lot of fear in the air today. What are you seeing that?
Oh, my goodness, Bob. I have people ask me fairly frequently, are we on the verge of World War III? Is the American dollar about to collapse?
Yes.
Is the Lord about to come back? You know, there's a lot of that in the air for sure. And by the way, Bob, I think I figured out why you like Seven Gray Swans so much. You know what I think?
What is that?
I think it's because I talk about prudence. You love prudence. You're the prudent money guy.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
a
common connection.
I've got another one for you. Here's an idea, and you can do this in all your free spare time, is go back, do a second edition, and do an update to where we are 4 or 5 years later, and then include the gray swans you wish you would have put in the book to begin with.
Well, you know, Bob, I love the idea, and you're always such an encouragement to me that I will give that some serious thought. The problem is, I think we've gone from seven gray swans to about 70 of them. It's a never-ending list.
Well, let's get started. We started going back through the book. We didn't make very much headway last time, so we did it towards the end of the program. But I wanted to do a deep dive, and not in any rush. If we get through it, we get through it. If we don't, we don't. But like I said, I think this is important because, and I think you'll agree with me on this, Chuck, is that the more people understand, the more calm they are. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that. I think information does lead to, the type of insight where we can calm our mind. It's often the unknown that is the most unsettling, and that's actually why I think talking about gray swans is important. A gray swan is actually obvious. It's an obvious, known, visible threat or danger. We tend to think it has such an extreme improbability that we ignore it. Why give it any credence? But as you know, we've seen a lot of things that some people once called conspiracy theories turn out not to be conspiracy theories. And I think gray swans can turn out to become, a black swan event, something that we really thought might never happen, and it sneaks up on us.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we're in an environment that really almost anything is believable. And
yeah.
that's what adds to that level of fear is that, you know, they get the viral email and, America's coming to an end. Go to americanscomingtotheend.com and listen to this important video. And yeah, I'll never forget this, that this was years ago. That this guy, Porter Stansberry, you may know who he is, he really started this whole category of gloom and doom marketing. And he would do a 90-minute video, and people would actually watch that from beginning to end, which just amazes me.
Yeah, but, well, fear does sell. There's no doubt about
yes.
it. Fear sells. I love Warren Buffett's quote that fear sells, but optimism pays.
And like that.
That's going against the tide, going against the current. And certainly you and I don't want to use fear to motivate people. It's usually a terrible outcome. But I do think that being informed is, God gave us a mind, and he said to use our mind. And he talks about that the wise see danger, and they take action. They do something about it. And I think if you don't, then you're going to be a victim of your circumstance. You're going to be just frozen by fear, and you're going to watch the rising tide and not do anything to stop it.
Yeah, and I want to add to something that you said here just a few minutes ago, is that this is not a doom and gloom message today. This is not a forecasting message today. This is, hey, these are some trends that you need to keep an eye on, and need to understand kind of what's going on with some of these trends and learn. And one of the great things about this book, it's a short book, but just jam-packed full of info. And I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, I do think, as you said earlier, that we use our minds. Data is a gift. That's what the word means. The Latin root of the word data, it means it's a gift. God gives us information and knowledge, and we can see these things. And as I said earlier, I think being a wealth manager, a financial advisor like you are, people expect you to be prudent. You don't want to be impulsive and tossed around by every thing that comes down the pike. You have to think through it, sort the wheat from the chaff. I remember my son was in the military, and he said that fear would spread through their ranks.
Oh yeah,
like a virus, and it's contagious, and so we have to be very careful with that, Bob.
Let's start with I get this question at least two or three times a week. Something along the lines of a digital currency. Just talk about what that looks like.
Well, we already have forms of digital currency. Essentially, it is here. What the real concern is that the governments or the central banks are going to form their own. And right now, your choice is what would be considered the private digital currency, such as Bitcoin or Ethereum. That's a private digital currency. You can argue it's not a currency, it's an asset. I understand all of that. But the reality is it's a non-tangible form of currency. It's just exists online in a server somewhere. And so the movement is towards central banks adopting their own currency, what's called CBDC, a central bank digital currency that would resemble cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. And that's what I think we need to be watching out for. I think that's a gray swan that I've written about.
And that includes probably the forefront, just to connect these two, that includes the digital dollar that the Fed's creating. Is that fair?
Yeah, you're right. Well, that's what the American government is referring to, and they're exploring it. This is a known fact. This is not a conspiracy theory. They're looking into it. They're researching it. They're having private and public committees work on what would be the pros and cons of having a digital dollar backed by the central banking system, and that is underway right now.
So do you see any, I mean, there's a lot of cons, obviously, but do you see any pros to going this route? I mean, like you said, we're probably, I don't know, the old 80-20 rule, probably 80% of the way, all the way there right now as it is.
Yeah, if you use the arguments that they use, which I think is always wise to know what they're thinking, they say, well, first of all, it's a kindness to the unbanked. They're a number of people who have no access to formal banking systems, and by bypassing the traditional banking system today, the digital dollar could be issued directly to all Americans without any fees and no minimum balances, and everybody would have similar access to this form of currency. I also say it would be less expensive, that it would reduce risk for payments, that a lot of fraud could be eliminated. It would allow feds to adjust monetary policy quickly. They could send checks, overnight during a pandemic. There's all kinds of reasons that they say it would work for the good of all humanity.
Let's talk a little bit about Bitcoin, because I have started to get this opinion, not my opinion, but from other people, that they think that Bitcoin would be the next cyber currency that the Fed would use. I can't even remotely see that happening. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I don't think that they will do that. That's just my opinion. I think they'll form their own, that they have direct access over the governance of that currency. I think Bitcoin is a threat to the reserve banking system, and it's intended to be. People love it because the bankers don't have control of it.
Right.
And so I don't think they can gain control of it, or unless they try to legislate that it's illegal to own Bitcoin and you have to surrender it or something like that. But I think what they'll try to do is to say they have a better version. And that better version is a version that's controlled by the feds, and that they will ensure that, they create value out of it, and you're less prone to fraud or risk. The problem with it, as you know, Bob, is that it is a system which we lose financial privacy.
Yes.
It allows the Federal Reserve to track and control our use of the currency. Some Republicans have introduced legislation to ban it. They see it as a surveillance tool by the federal government. They would have line of sight to all of our transactions. And I do think that is the big red flag. The warning sign is that economic freedom and economic freedom and economic privacy are basically the same side, the two sides of the same coin. You have to have privacy to have freedom.
You know, the one thing that we've really never discussed, and this is pure speculation, if you had a timeline, how close do you think we are to seeing that implemented in our economy?
10 years.
10 years.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. The good news is government is slow.
Yes.
They're inefficient. This is not a bunch of entrepreneurs trying to solve this problem. This is a bunch of committees. This is a bunch of people that I don't think they have a sense of urgency. I think it will maybe speed up if they ever feel threatened by other forms of currency. I mean, they do feel the threat, but they don't think Bitcoin will ever get big enough to threaten. I mean, think about the trillions of dollars in circulation right now,
sure.
Trillions of U.S. dollars. And, that's a complex shift, a complex switch in systems from all those dollars to completely digital. And I remember thinking when credit cards were issued as a boy that, wow, money's going to go away. And that hasn't happened. Still,
right.
30% of all retail transactions are still with cash. And I think that's great. That's still a pretty big number in America.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. I'm talking to Chuck Bentley about a great book. A book that I refer to quite a bit because I think it's important that we understand the trends that threaten our financial future. Be aware of what's going on in our country and culturally. And this book nails it. It covers it. It's called Seven Gray Swans. If you want more information, go to www.crown.org. And spend some time on that website. There are some great resources on that website. Love the Ministries of Crown and what they're doing. God is using this group to really change some lives through the use of stewardship, and not a better stewardship resource, in my opinion, than crown.org. Okay, modern monetary theory. Okay, for any of you who are threatening to turn the channel, just hang on. Modern monetary theory, and you use the game Monopoly to describe it, couldn't be a better example. Explain how it works.
Well, modern monetary theory means that debt doesn't matter, and that governments that issue their own currency can issue as much as they want without any type of concern for the consequences. In my view, it's a completely upside-down theory of economics, but it's actually been written about. Dr. Stephanie Kelton is a professor of economics. She wrote a book called The Deficit Myth, and in it she says these government deficits don't matter. She said, imagine if you're the bank in a monopoly game, the bank can give out as much money as it wants. The bank can loan as much money as it wants, and as long as it can continue to supply money, there are no consequences. You can simply create money to pay off your own debt. So, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Now, you and I both know there's a lot to worry about, because I believe deficits do matter. And even Larry Fink of BlackRock just said this week, I'm concerned about the growing out-of-control government budget and deficit.
Well, it's shocking, I guess is the best word, that we live in a society that operates as if $34 trillion, which is $1,000,000 34 times, is not that big of a deal. In fact, it's interesting, if you've listened to even the talking points of two presidential candidates going after it, neither one of them are talking about all this debt. At what level, I guess the question is, and once again, purely speculation, at what level of debt does our economy just implode?
Well, I wish I knew, Bob. Historically, economists have said 130% of debt to GDP. Now, I know that you've done your homework, and there's a lot of countries that have exceeded that number.
Yes.
They are much higher than that. But each situation has to be evaluated separately. For instance, the highest in the world is Japan. They're double the American debt to GDP. The federal debt is about 260%. The difference is, when they went into that problem, the people have a lot of high personal savings rate. And so they were able to continue functioning in their economy, you know, growing businesses, buying, selling, trading, opening stores, starting companies. All of those things were happening because the people had money. The government was broke, but the people were not broke. In the American situation, where it doesn't totally correlate to Japan, is we have a broke government and a population that's fairly similar to the federal government. In other words, a low amount of savings or no savings and high debt. That's what creates a pretty dangerous situation for our economy.
You know, it's funny. I was flipping through the book, and I saw that number of 130%, that growth to GDP ratio, and I happened to look it up last night. And we're sitting at 129.
Right.
Pretty close.
Hello. You know, BlackRock comes out and says, hey, we're at 129. Let's not get to 130.
Really, really.
People are talking about it besides me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, I just want to throw this in here because I don't know that we've ever really talked about this, but just want to get some general thoughts on this, just because this is, you've already mentioned it earlier, probably the one thing that is in the top two or three of biggest fears, and that's the notion of the dollar crashing. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that all currency is backed by trust and confidence. In other words, it has no real value unless other people believe it has value. That's why gold has historically been trusted as a source of stored value. The American dollar is still considered valuable on the world market. All these countries are trying to replace it as the world's reserve currency. They haven't been successful, and part of it is nobody trusts them either. I don't trust China. I don't want Chinese currency. I don't want pesos.
Good point.
I don't have trust in them. And so it boils down to the good faith and credit of the U.S. government. And what happens, a currency crash happens when high debt, runaway debt, intersects political instability. And where we have that risk of that intersection happening is probably in November. If we have a politically destabilizing event, there's not a smooth transition of power. Mm-hmm. On either side of it, basically you have the risk that other people from the outside look and go, wait a minute. You know, those people are crazy. Those people aren't able to maintain good governance. We don't trust them anymore. Then money will flee, and people will exit the dollar to a safe haven. But the probability of that, I think, is low. Although, you know, media wants us to believe it's really high. And I think there is a probability of it. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a gray swan. The future confidence in our electoral process and a smooth transition of power, I think that's a real concern.
You know, it makes me wonder, at, say, December, January, or January of next year, what we'll be talking about. Because you could speculate this going so many different ways. And it's just, it's concerning.
You know, Bob, I'll just speak to that in a way that comes directly from my heart. I don't allow politics to control my outlook, because I really think the private sector has so much more grit and rely. People persevere. People get through hard times. And American people have been so resilient. And I look beyond the political rancor, beyond all the challenges at that level, and say, but what about the people? Like, where I live, people get along. Where I live, people are functioning. Where I live, we're enjoying our neighbor. And we're not throwing rocks at each other just because one is red or one is blue. And I think that that gives me great hope beyond this current election.
Real quick, just have one question for you before we go. I haven't seen this before until just the other day in your book. You mentioned deflation in the book, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it is a possibility that we could easily transition to that state from where we are today?
Yeah, I'm not an economist, but the easiest way I think of it is inflation is when there's more money than there is in our goods to purchase, right? There's an abundance of money chasing too few goods to buy. But deflation is when there's more goods available than money in the system. And so you have an abundance of goods and people aren't buying them. For instance, right now in the housing market, we're seeing a slowing because of the interest rate. The turnover of homes isn't as high as it was. Homes are sitting on the market longer, which means prices may deflate. They may start going south. They may go down. And I think it's a knife-edge risk between inflation and deflation.
When they
pull back on money supply, it's very possible they create a deflationary situation.
Well, Chuck, we will take another stab at it next time that we talk. Maybe we'll get through the book, Seven Gray Swans, Trends That Threaten Our Financial Future. You can go to crown.org and get more information. Chuck, always a blessing to get to talk to you.
Keep up the great work, my friend. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. I know that I've referenced this book many times and that Chuck wrote this book, I want to say, four, 5 years ago, something like that. I could be off. But why I think it's important is because there is so much nonsense going on. There's so many people stirring the pot of fear to sell a book, to sell a subscription, whatever that they're really trying to do. The gloom and doom marketing, but I think it's once you get up the curve on what's going on, you realize what's possible and what's not. Hey, this is Bob Brooks. If you got a question for me, please go to the website at prudentmoney.com and send it in, because we are all out of time. Till we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.
That's all the time we have for today. Questions or comments for Bob, or to find out more great information like what you've just heard, visit www.prudentmoney.com. Be sure to join Bob Brooks again for the next edition of Prudent Money.